Und das da oder nein, das Wort ein paar Schuss, die Wurm. Ein Wort, das bin ich schrei, wenn ich schrei, ist das an der Pusik, Eila hat Wurm, als die Bibel muss ich auch Kol Yisroel. What's the significance of the Kol Yisroel? Was ich meine, ist addressing all of Kol Yisroel together. So ich quote mal am Schiff, der am Schiff says an der Pusik, Hechaich techiach samiseichu, weil ich sieße Ulof Chait. In order to make sure that you're not going to be causing a chait when you give mitzvah to someone, you're rebuking someone who needs to hear criticism, but you want to make sure that you're not going to be causing them to be ashamed, and you don't want to hurt their feelings, you don't want to do an avaira with that alone. So he says, the aitza is to give mitzvah to a tzaddik. If you have a friend who's a good person, and he doesn't deserve that you should really criticize him, and you'll tell him the criticism on something that's totally off, and nobody's going to really assume that you meant him, and somebody else will be hearing it, by the way, and they're going to learn from it. So they're going to be hearing the words of Misra and Techocha that you want to tell them, but they won't have heard it directly and they won't be afraid. They won't be hurt by it. And he says, this is the tie, Shechach Techich Samiseichu. Give Techocha to your friend, the one that's doing the right thing, and you'll be avoiding the avaira of having hurt someone's feelings. I just remember, as I'm saying this, I'm remembering a situation in a shiel, a besmedish, where people would talk by davening. And there was some people that didn't talk by davening. And the Gabi used to always get up and scream the name of the person who never spoke by davening. Rabbi Yankel, stop talking. And everyone understood. It was like an old joke, but it was a nice way of saying that everyone should be quiet. So the Ben Ishchai says, this is the Taich Ayla Durim, Hashadim Moshe, El Kol Yisroel. He says, Moshe Rabbeini, Berov Chachmusai, was giving Mitzvah to Kol Yisroel on different Avaidas, like Rashi mentions, right? Different things that Kol Yisroel didn't do right. None of those things were committed by all of Kol Yisroel at the same time. So instead of Moshe Rabbeinu singling out each Shaivet and telling them, yo, you did this wrong, and you did that wrong, and then they would be hurt by it, Moshe Rabbeinu took all of them together, and he gave them a whole drusha, and it seemed, I guess, that he wasn't necessarily addressing everyone at the same time, because everyone understood, well, he's not talking to me now, and it wasn't obvious who he was talking to, and like that, he made sure not to hurt anyone's feelings. So first of all, just the sensitivity, you know, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, we're talking about the biggest novi, the biggest person, repeating what Hashem wanted him to repeat, even though he's talking on his own, but you know he's definitely a shchinimet beistar groinoy, and he's still being so careful not to hurt anyone's feelings. He's making sure that his message is coming across the right way, and I think this is such an important lesson. There's so many things that comes ben lechavayda ben shlishta, you know, between people when it comes to relationships. So many things that have to be said. So many things that could be said one way or the other. And it's never a justification or rationalization that because I have to say it, so I'm allowed to hurt your feelings. Or because this has to be done or said or expressed or communicated, that's why I don't care how you feel about it. It's always important to know how to say something and when to say something, aside from just if to say something, which is also obviously very important. So with that, let me read a question. It's a long question. The question itself isn't really so long, but I'll read it because I like reading things the way it comes in. Somebody just asked me recently if I addressed their question. He said, it didn't sound like mine, but maybe you're changing the details. I read questions off the paper the way they come. When I have to, I change a detail or two, or a date, or a year. But not more than that. When I'm reading questions, this is the way people write it to me. That's why some are longer, some are shorter. Everyone has their own style. Okay. Thanks for the essays. Once again, I was blown away by the on-target, razor-sharp response to the question of Parshas Vayeshanan. Okay, this is going back already a while. I'm almost a year behind, but if anyone wants my essays and doesn't yet receive them, you could sign up by parshalessons@lahoi.org, parshalessons at leharr.org. And if anyone has a question, they want to send me an email or contact me, you could also send it to rabbigruen@lahoi.org, rabbigruen@leharr.org. Okay. So that in that essay you dealt with both a father and a son, heavy eggshell walking, and it was so refreshable. It was so refreshing and relatable. And now may I ask a question? I myself, it's pretty identifying this question actually. But instead of changing every other word, I'm just assuming that it's okay if I read the question. I myself bought a new elegant dress to use the two close summer simchas. After the professional alterations and mending were completed, my husband spotted the garment on the hanger and made a comment about it that he didn't like the way it looked because of the color. Okay, that much instead of going into detail about. I laughed at the comparison, what he compared it to, and I expressed that I appreciate his opinion about my outfit, and I enjoy wearing things that only when I get his approval first. I told him how good I feel leaving to a simcha after he compliments me, and how important it is that his to hear his opinion about things each time I get something new, because at the end of the day, it's him that I seek to impress. I did, however, point out that perhaps it looks like the way he described it, only because it's hanging on lame on a hanger, and once it's accompanied by life, color, and personality, it will get a punim chadushas. I tried to dress for him, and he was kind enough to phrase it that he believed I would look a lot better in a lebedigit, different color, and wholeheartedly granting me the credit card to go ahead and purchase a brand new simcha piece that would suit me better. I made sure to thank him and show gratitude for his unprecedented generosity and genuine concern for me to look and feel my best, which is a woman's dream. I did, however, comment that shopping for me is not a hop, skip, jump away. Given my busy work schedule, it takes a lot of time and effort for me to hit the jackpot. He strongly encouraged me to make it happen before the upcoming family simcha, rather than just wearing that which I bought. To which I responded, I'll try my best. He urged me to spend as much as necessary, close your eyes on the price tag, and get hold of a different outfit, which I wowed with appreciation, but still made it clear that it doesn't happen in a minute. Fast forward, my husband flew off on a trip, and he will be back a week later. Tonight, I have a close cousin's wedding. Obviously, with the current schedule and specifics, it wasn't feasible for me to manage a new chasna dress. The original one that he nixed is still hanging fixed and steamed and ready to be worn. My question is as follows. My husband is anyway not in town, and he won't see me tonight. I do have an older, more abused dress in the closet that I wore until now to most special occasions. Given the two factors, and bearing in mind that I want to show him respect and not the opposite, I want him to feel that I absolutely, hands down, no questions asked, rely and need his opinion, and it's only him that I look to impress and please and look beautiful for. Should I give up wearing the new dress that I like in case he would ask me afterwards, so did you wear it in the end? Or, and if I go with the excuse that I wanted to get a new one, like he suggested, but I just didn't get it, he might feel, yeah, not think, but he might feel, so why didn't he just wear an old one? I don't want to give him the message that I don't care about his opinion, which was very much his trepidation and fear with me all along. Should I rather just cancel this excellent, fashionable piece and wear a safe old one that already has his approval and thus show him how much I take his opinion into account and his taste? Either way, the wedding will come and go, regardless of what a cousin wears. Let's not kid ourselves. I'll be 100% happy with whatever advice I'm given. In essence, I really don't think this is a major life-altering decision. However, I do want it to have the right impact on his confidence and the way he views my importance of him, which I received an abundance of criticism for in the past. It would be stupid and ludicrous of me to make the wrong move for a silly dress and not seize the opportunity to lift him and make him feel good. I know this can be a credit in my marriage bank account. I just wonder if it really does make sense, as I can never be certain. Thank you in advance, and yes, I'd appreciate a reply regardless of the timing. These little things keep on coming up in my relationship with my husband, so it's never too late. Okay, that was a long question. I left out a few details or descriptions or expressions, but not much more than that at all. So, the first thing I want to say is just, I like starting with a compliment, but I usually mean it when I say it. You can tell when somebody's somewhat educated, let's call it, and into it, so to speak. In other words, even just from the way the question is written, which was part of the reason why I wanted to read the elaborate question the way it was asked, was because it's nice to see how somebody communicated and understands the equation, understands the importance, understands that this is the question that I'm dealing with, and it's still a challenge. Even when people are educated, even when people do listen to classes and read books and are motivated to invest in their marriage and the relationship, it's still hard to do the right thing, not a question. But it's still nice to see that people do take this seriously. Shalom bayis, and marriage b'chlal is something to take seriously and not something to sneeze at. Now, so part of what I wanted to compliment here was not just the understanding and the caring and the thinking, but it was also the communication. It sounds like you communicated very nicely when your husband said something. You could have gotten insulted, or you could have gotten hurt, or you could have gotten offended, and you could have taken to the next level and start saying that this means that he doesn't care about you, or he's trying to control you, or whatever. And people do all these things. So it's nice, the way you're describing it at least, I wasn't there, and maybe he would repeat a different story, but it's nice that you're saying that when he said something to you you didn't like, you answered nicely. When he asked you to buy something, you answered gently, etc. It's very sad when people turn a comment into a fight and a disapproval or an opinion into something personal and an isolated issue into a marriage problem. And it's a terrible thing. terrible thing when the past and the present and the future all gets mixed in and everything just becomes totally misinterpreted and connecting dots and wires and everything else, and it's terrible. So people don't realize how fast they do it. And when they do it, it's funny, they can repeat it with such confidence, like, you know, I told them, you think I'm stupid? I know what you mean. You mean some long, set of books. That's what you mean. You said one line, but you really, that's what you mean. Even if someone meant it, that's not the way to respond when someone says a comment. And people are entitled to say comments, and people are entitled to respond to comments, and this is just normal. That's that. Now, let me tell you how I understand this question. Let me say how I understand it. It could be I'm misinterpreting. I only read off a paper or something. I don't know much more than I could guess after I hear the way someone asks. But to me, it sounds like a very idealistic question. Which means, what would somebody answer to this question? I bought a new dress for a chasana. I have an old one that I used to wear, and my family knows that one already, and they probably expect me to wear that dress that I wear from time to time. My sister, on the other hand, doesn't have a dress. She doesn't have a dress for the chasana. She doesn't have what to fit into. Or she couldn't afford one, or whatever it was. The other one got ruined, and she doesn't have what to wear to the chasana. Should I give away my new dress and let her look beautiful, and I'll wear the old one, and it's not terrible. I wear it all the time. I can't give her the old one. Everyone's going to realize that she's wearing my dress. Or no, I bought a new dress, and my husband bought it for me, and we both are excited that I'm going to be wearing it, and my sister will have to figure out what to do. I call that a very idealistic question. What do I mean, idealistic question? Because there's no real answer. The real answer is that, wow, that would be amazing of you to give your sister your dress. You bought a new dress for a chasana, invested, put away money, you're excited, prepared, and you give it away to someone else to wear. They'll definitely write you up in the books about that. And I'm not saying it as a joke. I'm saying that would be probably the best thing a person could do. If a person's asking if that's really the right thing to do, and does that mean I'm taking the more important things in life into consideration, which means my sister, Hashem, and a lot of other such things, my Yetzer Tov, or however you want to phrase it, then yeah, the answer is of course, not a question. The second somebody asks, am I obligated to do that? I mean, I bought a dress. She could have also bought one. She didn't, for whatever reason. She woke up today, day of chasana. I'm going to feel very awfully lousy in my dress, in the old one, either because I told people I have a new one, or whatever other reason. And I just want to know if I'm obligated to give away my dress to someone. If I assume she'll make it to the chasana, even if I don't give it to her, she'll probably figure out how to do it. The answer is, you're not obligated. You're not obligated. It's still the right thing to do, and you're still not obligated. And this is the balance. This is where people, very often... Let me take it a step further, because some people in that situation, when people get a little personal, no, your sister. If only my sister would what if it's a poor person and they need money, and he's asking me if I can give money. I don't have money for him, but I can sell the dress. I give tzedakah. So if I can give the money for tzedakah, should I do that? Well, they'll definitely write it in your biography. But is a person actually obligated to be that selfless and to care that little about how they look just because this whole world is anyway, Odom HaShaker, and it's just Odom Oiver. And 7 years from now, nobody's going to remember what you wore to the chasana. So my point is just that, on the one hand, you're right. Your marriage is definitely more than the dress. Definitely more than the dress. Your husband's feelings is definitely more than whoever's opinion, whoever's going to see you by the chasana and decide how you look, and whoever else you're trying to impress. It's not a question. Not a question. If you're asking if Ishak Shaira Oisar Tzorimbala means that you're making the right calculations in your head, and making your husband feel good, especially when he's so nice about it, by the way, and letting you swipe credit cards or whatever else, if that's more important, as you ended the question, I'll grant you that you're right. It is more important. It is more important. If you're actually filling up your marriage bank account and exactly how you're going to cash out on it, I don't know. I don't know. But the answer is yes. And that's the answer to many idealistic questions when people ask, what's really right? What's really right? Yeah, it's really right. It's really right to buy even a cheaper dress and give more money to tzedakah. Not that you're obligated to. This is where it shifts. The second the question becomes, I don't really want to. I'm feeling controlled. I'm feeling resentful. Feeling suffocated. This is not very nagishmak. Do I have to? Am I supposed to? Will this end up really making my marriage that much better at the end of the day or not? That's when the answer might change. It's not necessarily so. You don't necessarily have to. It doesn't even sound like he prohibited you from wearing it, or told you that he can't, or Chas v'Shalom, he's going to run away if you do. That's why I call this a tricky question. Idealism and best case scenario and the right thing to do isn't always as practical as people think or as people would want, and it could still be correct. And when something impractical is done with resentment, then sometimes that's not helpful. When somebody's doing something they feel bad about, right? Or they're doing something because they're expecting something huge in return, and then they don't get it, and then they get more resentful. So you're basically setting yourself up for disaster. And this is something that, you know, it's a shame to see people going to something so nicely and then just come out in a fight. And I've seen this so often. People going on a vacation or buying things or buying a house or, you know, important things in life, which essentially they should have a say in, I think. And if they would express their say with confidence, it would be taken into consideration. Nobody's telling them that they can have a say, but they like squash their opinion and their self, either hoping that the return will be something much greater, which doesn't end up happening, or thinking that they have to, when they might not really have to. And that's very important. Now, the difference between idealism and obligation is a very important difference, because what I'm talking about now is idealism. And this means that the lechatchila, the best thing to do is give you money for tzedakah and help your sister and make your husband feel good. Those are very important things in life. They're not necessarily halochas, they're not necessarily specific hashkofa. You know, it's the reason why I'm saying this is because sometimes people then use the same idea and they apply it somewhere else incorrectly and say, well, I'm not really that type. I don't feel good about it. If I don't feel good about it, then it's not for me. I like the Yiddishkeit that makes me feel good. And they end up overstepping certain boundaries and guidelines which are obligatory and things that you're not entitled to. And this touches upon very many parts of marriage as well. There are very many things in the marriage, in the Yiddish shtib, in the Jewish home, that you are obligated to do. So just to say, well, but I get resentful when I do it. I hear, but that doesn't really exempt you. So it's very important to understand that I'm talking over here specifically about things that doesn't sound like you have to, doesn't sound like you're obligated to, doesn't sound like your husband is telling you you're not allowed to. So back to that. I think the answer to the question is that if you believe in what you asked, that your marriage and your husband's feelings and his confidence and you're caring to only impress him at the end of the day and to show appreciation for all his graciousness, letting you buy whatever you want, if you mean it, then yeah, I think it would be a wonderful thing if you could do it and tell him, you know, I did it, I did it for you and I feel so good about it, etc., etc. And if that's not really how you feel and you're just asking if you have to feel that way when you don't, then maybe not. Then maybe not. Now, let's go to the next part. The next part is the communication, which is, as I say very often, this is, communication is everything. You can do the right thing with the wrong communication, or do the wrong thing with the right communication, and that makes all the difference. Let's make believe, let's say, that the right thing would be to do exactly what your husband wants, because it's the right thing to do. And you do it begrudgingly, you do it resentfully, and you tell him afterwards how unhappy you were and how much he owes you for it and how many people commented that the old dress is ugly and disgusting and how you had to leave the chasna early because you didn't feel comfortable sitting there, etc., 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 and how impractical it was of him to ask you or expect you to buy something else, whatever else you're going to communicate. You may have done the right thing, but you communicated it wrong and you didn't accomplish anything, right? The Mishnah talks about Shnayim Shetuli B'Shaim, two people do the same mitzvah, one person did it right, one person did it wrong. And sometimes you can do the wrong thing, let's call it, which maybe is a little more selfish, maybe a little more self-absorbed, maybe. Not terrible, by the way, and I hope I'm not making it sound wrong, but you can do it right. You can do it right by telling your husband, listen, your opinion means everything to me. I'm so appreciative that you care about how I look and that you express it, and you have good taste, you know, that too. And the fact that you let me buy a new dress, that's like something special. I admire you and I appreciate it. Blah, blah, blah. All the good things that he has to hear and he should hear. It was hard for me. I hope you won't be upset. I didn't feel comfortable wearing the old thing. I did wear this dress. I feel bad that I couldn't do it the way you wanted. And I hope next time we'll be able to work it out in a way that we're both happy about. And I really appreciate that you didn't tell me I can't wear it. It was nice of you. You could have said so. If you communicate nicely, then even doing the wrong thing sometimes, you know, for you know, you could gain more points by communicating nicely about something undesirable than the other way around. As a matter of fact, sometimes you could even gain more points than doing the right thing with right communication than the wrong thing with the right communication. But that's already a little too deep. My point is just that you could use things, you could use even uncomfortable things the right way and communicate it about it, and then you don't have to be so worried about all the hurt feelings and all the deflated ego and all the whatever else there may be. It could be that in the past, when you did things on your own and your husband felt you weren't taking his opinion seriously, it could be it had to do with how you communicated it. Maybe that's what made him a little edgy or sensitive to it. So, I also mentioned, I think it was a week ago maybe, or 2 weeks ago, about not communicating. Sometimes people have a problem with communicating because they don't know how to communicate something undesirable and they just don't communicate about it. That's not either good. It's important for everyone to learn how to, even when it's uncomfortable, how to communicate something. And instead of waiting for him to ask you and walk on eggshells or try to find out from his sister what you were wearing, you could tell him, you could talk to him about it. You can even tell him about it before the chasna. I wish I could do it the way you wanted. Mama's not working. I really appreciate your understanding and your feeling. We'll talk about it next time. You know, not communicating is also not a way to go. Now, it's important to keep in mind, whenever you're talking about these situations over here, don't get black and white. It's not all or none. And it's also something I'm picking up between the lines, where someone feels like I have to be totally submissive to my husband and surrender completely my own opinion and taste if I want to be a good wife. That's part of the question. Or, no, I don't have to. I don't have to. It's not yes or no. Especially if your husband's a little more sensitive and he cares more about these things and the relationship is a little more tense and a little more, it's important to know how to decide when and how much, when yes and when not. And that's everything. It doesn't have to necessarily be black and white, all or none. And that if you can't do it all the way, then you might as well just do nothing. Or if you can't, or if you have to do it, then it must be everything. That's also something that's important to understand. And adraba, when you do something or when you don't do something, the way you would have wanted to do it for him, right? It doesn't mean that, okay, so we're in a fight now. So we're bitter about it. We're not on good terms. Or the other way. When things are uncomfortable, that's the time to communicate better. When things are not being done the way one another wants, necessarily, that's the time to build more relationship, to care more about communication, to care more about closeness and spending quality time and complimenting each other and buying something, just to make up for it. Instead of getting bitter and upset over it and letting that one decision or one bad move or one undesirable situation take over the relationship, that's the time to invest more. And people don't realize that. Very often when it comes to children or spouses, people don't realize how a small tick in the thing just crumbled the whole problem. Instead of being that a reason to invest more in the relationship, because maybe he will be a little offended that I didn't take his opinion seriously. No, we're not on good terms. I couldn't make him happy. He's probably going to be upset. I'm upset that he's being upset. I'm upset that he thinks that I should have done something to make him not upset. And that just goes nowhere. And in general, even when things are stressed out, keep on communicating. B'chlal. Just last week I was talking to a guy who tells me that in the past, the pattern was that his wife would get upset, then he would get upset that she's upset, and then he would get upset that she's not letting him make her unupset, and then he would just shut down, and then there was no communication for a week, and after a week we would... What was that roller coaster? Communication, in general, has to go on at all times. So even if somebody is a little upset, just communicate. Forget about make up for it, just communicate. So let me just finish off by saying, I don't know if I answered the question. I don't know if I answered the question. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if you should wear this dress or that dress. But I do hope that I gave some perspective. And at the end of the day, you will always have to make your own decision. And what I did try to point out and help you understand is that it's not always about right and wrong. A lot of it has to do with who you're dealing with and why the decision is being made and how you're talking about it and how you're communicating about it. So I think, just to summarize, I complimented you. I'm saying it again in my summary. On dealing with it as it's happening in a very calm and gentle manner, which is something that always has to happen. Whenever you're discussing or negotiating or even debating or arguing about something, it could be done in two ways. So doing that the right way, even just discussing something like this, should be done the right way. I think like many questions, there's a more right way to do something and something that's not necessarily as right. And part of deciding which one to do is how you feel about it. Because if you're going to do the right thing for the wrong reason, that could also cause a problem. And then there's communication about it. Whatever you do decide, you have to know how to communicate the right way and make sure that it's being done properly. And then make sure that the relationship doesn't turn into this mess because of one little thing. Not everything is black and white. Not everything has to take in everything. And I hope with Hashem's help, with the right focus, we'll be able to do what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Sometimes you have to say things and communicate things that aren't so gushmak. And don't think that because you want to say it or have to say it, that's a reason to not care how it's said. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to all the Eden to make sure nobody's hurt. I wish myself, when we think things through and we let ourselves be educated and we take these things seriously and we're still careful about how we communicate, I wish myself, even such situations could be dealt with properly and we could live together.